You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot, fade away. It's the best Celtics podcast day to day. I get excited about it every night about it. A real C's fan wouldn't want to live their life without it. Banner 18 in the making, we gotta make it. Best squad in the East and still we can't get complacent. Most winning franchise, so the history's ancient. You could tell them other guys to go and plan a vacation. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and Jay King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. The most in-depth coverage that you ever gonna hear. Well respected in the city like Russell's career. It's Raining Jay.
Hey there, welcome back to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Thank you for making us part of your daily routine. We're here for you Monday through Friday. This is the Wednesday show, and I am John Corrales of the Raining Jays, sort of here by myself in that no one is on this podcast with me, but Sam Jam Packard does have an interview. The lead assistant for the Maine Red Claws, Nick Friedman. He had a half-hour-long conversation with him, so we'll get to that in just a minute. Not really much news of the day happening other than the one item I want to bring up. Kyrie Irving saying that he's still pissed off about Jamal Murray taking that three-pointer at the end of the loss to the Denver Nuggets. He was fined $25,000 for throwing the ball into the stands, which... I shouldn't laugh. I guess it's funny, but also, you know, obviously you shouldn't be throwing the ball into the stands, but he got dinged $25,000 for it. And I just have this picture of him taking $25,000 and throwing that into the stands. But he today at practice was still pissed off. And here's the quote. "You just don't play basketball like that. It's as simple as that. You just don't. There's a tradition and respect within the league as well as in any basketball game. Obviously, you've won the game, you have it sealed, you've had a great game, game of your life, and you do something like that, it's pretty immature. That's just so thirsty of a player to go after something like that. Clearly, 50 points is a big deal, but get it within regulation, take it as a man, get your free throws, and get to 50 points. But you don't wait till the end of the game, when everybody's not playing, to just launch up a shot and then nonchalantly go like this, as if it doesn't even matter. It's tradition in this league. It's just immature." When he says go like this, he shrugs. Finishing off the quote, "You just don't do that in the NBA, in any game. It's just a disrespect for your opponent, and I felt disrespected after the game, so your career-high ball goes in the stands." It's funny that he was like, okay, you want your ball, your career-high? Go get it. Which I can't say that I would have a different reaction. And it's funny. It's just funny. That he's just like, if I was out in the street somewhere and somebody pulled some kind of similar breach of etiquette, I would have just punted the ball as far as I could. You want that ball? Go get it. Look, it's not the hugest deal in the world, but I'll say it again. I said it last night in the other podcast. I'll say it here. It is, for lack of a better term, breach of etiquette, breaking the code, unwritten rules, whatever you want to call it. When I was playing, if I was in that situation, I know 50's right there. I can excuse Jamal Murray for getting caught up in the moment. It's a huge win for the Nuggets. You're at home. The crowd's going wild. You've got 48. You've got the ball and time's winding down. And that's, I get it. You get swept up in that moment. But at the same time, it is disrespectful. And we can sit here and say the Celtics should have stopped him from scoring some of those other 48 points so they weren't in that position. That's legitimate. That's totally legitimate. However, they didn't. Okay, so he's there. He's got 48 points. And to Kyrie's point, this is exactly the way I feel. Don't get the cheap 50. If you score 50, score 50 in a game, in the clear flow of the game, draw that extra foul, hit one of those other shots. I know he hit a ton of shots, but you scored 48. You scored 48. You didn't score 50. And if you hit that shot, that's a cheap 50. I know 50 is a nice round number and people want that round number, but you scored 48. Even if you hit that three at the end, my opinion is That wasn't a 50-point game. You scored 48, and that last three was cheap because nobody was guarding you. The 48 points that you scored when people were guarding you, that was awesome. That was amazing. That was a hell of a game. The last 3 points, if he scored those when nobody was guarding you, it was garbage time, that doesn't mean crap. So that's when you're a player, that's the disrespect. Like that, that's where I get that side of it. Again, I understand Jamal Murray going for his milestone, whatever, but I would be pissed too. I would be pissed if I was the Celtics. Part of it would be my own frustration for not being able to stop him, but part of it is, look, you did what you did. You did the damage. It's like the Simpsons when Homer, the Krusty the Clown Homer, is beating up on their Hamburglar guy, and the kid says, "Stop, stop, he's already dead." There's no need to do that. There's just no need for that shot. You did it. You beat the Celtics. You scored your 48. The other thing, that's nothing. That's masturbation. That's 50 points. That's not a real 50. Score your 50 in the flow of the game, and then you get the respect that a 50-point game deserves. So, and look, the 48 points that he scored, awesome. You know, the Celtics let him get hot, and he stayed hot, and that was an amazing game. One of the best games you'll see this season. It might be the best game that Jamal Murray ever plays offensively. I mean, it's just, I can't imagine him having a better game than that. That's his high point. And what sucks is his high point now is marred by this whole thing that people are sitting here even having this conversation. Even if you disagree with me, even if you sit there and say, well, I think you're wrong, John, fine. Maybe you think I'm wrong. This is not a universally held opinion. I think most basketball people, players, would kind of fall on my side, but not all. And I think a lot of fans may not care about that stuff. So there's a divide, but it doesn't matter. The fact that this is even a discussion, the fact that this is even something that people have to talk about, it does put a little mark on your huge milestone game. So, for Jamal Murray, who, like I said, this is going to be the best game of his life, potentially, to have that little thing that said, well, there's also this controversy. It's almost better that he missed the shot, because then he could just sit there and he has his 48-point game. And we don't even have to worry about if it's a legit 50 or not. So I get what Kyrie did. He got dinged, 25 grand. That's about right. So that's that. The other funny thing that I have to mention before I get to Sam's interview is that we talked about this after the game. Robert Williams was in the game to basically hack Plumlee. So he hacks Plumlee, then he gets hacked, and then he thinks he hears foul coming from the bench. And what they were saying is solid. And this is the quote. That was actually a miscommunication. I thought I heard foul him, but it was solid. It was so loud in the arena, but that's something I got to clean up. Man, Time Lord is just awesome. He is just awesome. Add this to the legend of the Time Lord, who actually ended up fouling Paul Millsap when he shouldn't have, and not understanding what was going on because the arena was too loud and it sounded like they said something else. Just an amazing next chapter in Robert Williams' basketball life. This just blows my mind that that's what happened. And it's totally cool. It didn't really make a difference, but that's just hilarious. Hilarious that that's what it was. Before we move on to the interview, I want to remind everybody to go listen to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast, Locked On Fantasy Basketball with Josh Lloyd. Great show. Has all the relevant information, everything that's happening in the league, day-to-day basis, covering the entire league top to bottom. So it's the hottest show on the network, and you should definitely be listening if you're a fantasy player. And even if you're not, because it really has the entire league covered, even from a non-fantasy perspective. But for a fantasy basketball player, you got to listen to that podcast because it's going to give you all the little tips and tricks to help you win your league, especially if you've laid some money down in your league. You want to get any kind of inside information that you can get to hopefully win your league, and Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast will definitely help you do that. Okay, here is Sam Jampackard and his interview with Red Claw's lead assistant, Nick Friedman, on the G League and a whole lot more.
All right, you guys heard Millie's. Now we bring in another one of Cambridge's finest. Once was the fastest kid in Cambridge, according to public record. He is Nick Friedman, the lead assistant coach of the Maine Red Claws. And we're going to be talking about the G League today. Nick, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Speaking of Millie, shout out to the new track, Strawberry Goya. It's fire.
There you go. This is one Cambridge son to another. Now, Nick Friedman, you may know him from his past D-League stints with the NA Suns and the RGV, what are they, Vipers?
Yeah, I don't know how many people may know me from that. But
that's a good point. I immediately recognized that as soon as I said that people probably don't know you. You may know him better from working out Terry Rozier and his pre-draft camps, along with Kevin Knox and Torian Prince, Antonio Blakeney, a whole host of other NBA players in his pre-draft camp. But right now he's the Red Claws lead assistant, the offensive coordinator. The Red Claws are what, 1-1 on the year?
1-1. Got our first win on yesterday. So against the Delaware Bluecoats. It was a great win for us.
There you go. And so I'm curious about the G League, I guess, and how it gets it has an expanding role, but I think as a coach of the G League, you have an interesting kind of role in the organization because you're in charge of the development of players, but you're also a competitor and you also want to win basketball games. And so I guess my first question is, how do you balance the desire to like kind of develop these players and you're trying to win every single game?
Well, I mean, I think it gets neglected that winning is part of development, right? Like all of these guys, you know, are expected that if they do get a chance to play in the NBA, they have to contribute to winning at a very high level, whether it's that they're high character guys that can add to the, you know, to the culture of a locker room, or they can just master all the little things that go into being a sacrificial role player. Right. So, you know, in terms of like game planning and preparing to win, I think a lot of those habits, while they may be just X's and O's based, are really, you know, geared towards helping these guys develop as individual players. You know,
but that makes sense. But like, so first game of the season, you have Robert Williams, the Time Lord, come in. I'm assuming you guys knew he was going to come in. But does that change like kind of how you game plan? You know, you're going to want to get him like 20 minutes a game. And does that change how your team concepts moving like going forward? How do you adjust for that?
It's great being part of an organization that's really what we call a one-to-one. So, you know, what we run upstairs is exactly what we run in the G League. So, you know, in terms of game planning for a guy like Rob Williams, I've been in situations, you know, where like, for example, with the Phoenix Suns last year, you know, their offensive concepts and defensive concepts are essentially polar opposite to what we're doing in the G League. So when you have a guy who's on assignment, you know, it's essentially a whirlwind for them because they don't really know what's going on. Whereas when you have a guy like Rob Williams, you know, we may have some different nuances here or there, but really he just fits in seamlessly because we're running the exact same stuff. So, you know, it's really great from a coaching standpoint to get a guy an assignment in a true one-to-one situation because there's really no difference in what we're preaching. We're all on the same page. So that really helps from a game planning standpoint.
And so when Rob Williams comes up to Maine, what are your, I guess, points of emphasis for him? What are you trying to get out of him when he's playing in the G League?
You know, and it's been, you obviously know, you know, Alex Barlow's role and Robert Williams' overall development. You know, we as a staff allow Alex to really be the central voice in how Robert is perceiving his overall game. So when it comes to coaching him, we truly just reinforce, obviously, what Barlow is talking about, you know, just being a true hard rolling five man who can just put a lot of pressure on the rim with just hitting the lower half of screens and getting out and diving to the rim, you know, and just being a ball mover. He really surprised me on Friday just with his ability to pass the ball. I thought he made some really high IQ plays at the trail position and in the post, and you know, just being solid defensively and just, you know, mastering our defensive concepts here in Boston. So You know, we just, you know, we're obviously reiterating what Barlow has been preaching to him since, you know, they've developed their relationship, and he's doing an unbelievable job. So
how much has he been shooting? That's something my buddy, or the guy who co-hosts the podcast, Jay King, wrote about. The Celtics kind of trying to develop his outside shot, because I think that's something the Celtics try to do with all their bigs, so they can focus on running more of a five-out system. What have you seen from his shooting so far, I guess?
Well, I know that they've been shooting a ton of free throws. You know, Rob actually hasn't been up here at all for the most part. He, you know, they played Detroit, and then he came up that next morning, was here for shoot around, did his pregame warm-up, played, and then left. So, you know, and when I was in Boston, he was recovering more so from his knee stuff. You know,
so really what you're telling me is that, I should ask you questions about the players you're actually coaching on a day to day rather than, Rob Williams.
Probably.
All right. Well, so let's talk about the guys who are with you, more often. I'm a huge Walt Lemon fan.
Love Walt Lemon.
Let's talk about the guys who are kind of the leaders on the Red Claws. Who have you? I know it's only been two games, but you guys have been running practices for a couple weeks now. You've also been practicing with these guys when they were with the Celtics, and the whole organization was together back in early September. Who should Celtics fans be excited about that are currently on the Red Claws? Who should they come see in Portland?
Well, Walt Lemon is a talent, man. I mean, the guy is an exceptional athlete.
He explodes to the basket.
He floats to the rim, you know, and he's just instantaneous offense. You know, he's averaging 27 points in two games for us. He gets to the rim at will. He touches the paint at will. And he finishes at a really efficient rate once he gets there. I think for him, obviously, people talk about, you know, the jump shooting as being really his next overall step of development and the step that he needs to take to really cross that line between being borderline and being a true NBA player. But for me, I really think if he, you know, becomes that much more of a pest defensively and that much more solid defensively, and is just more of a more consistent, his ability to make the right play from the point guard position. You know, there have been guys that, you know, can't shoot the ball, but at that level of athleticism, that level of quickness, can find their way, you know, and can attack short closeouts and still create offense regardless of their ability to not stretch the floor consistently. But I think, like, those two things, mastering the defensive end and being a high level decision maker and playmaker, I think, you know, you take steps in the right direction there. I think he's got a real chance. So,
and he's a two way player, right?
Mm-hmm. He's a two way guy.
Can you explain for our listeners out there what exactly that means? Like, could he can be called up at any time? I don't know the full contract details. So
as a two-way guy, right, you have 45 NBA days. Now, they've changed kind of the rules of what that means. It used to be like, for instance, like if I were traveling from Oklahoma, I had played in Oklahoma City, a G League game in Oklahoma City, and I was traveling to Boston, that'd be considered a day. Now that's not considered a day. So it's just days with the team. So once you exceed those 45 days, the organization has a decision to either convert your contract to being an actual NBA contract, or, you know, you're going from being a 16th or 17th man to an actual first 15 roster guy, or they can put you in the G League for the remainder of the year. And keep you there, or they can just cut you and terminate your contract and move on to another guy. So yeah, those are really like kind of like the surface level. That's the surface level description of a two way. So
I appreciate that, because I always forget that. I forgot about, we were going through the roster, but there's other players that Celtics fans may have heard of. Marcus Georges Hunt. He's got some time with some NBA teams last year, got some burn. How is he adjusting? He got a late start in the organization. What do you see out of him early on in the season?
Marcus has been solid for us. You know, I think he's still finding his rhythm a little bit here in Maine. You know, but he's got the ability to play in pick and roll. We've relied upon him to initiate some offense for us. You know, we're starting Walt Lemon, PJ Dozier, and Marcus. And I think all three of those guys could really initiate offense at any time, and he's done a solid job of doing so. You know, and I think for him, his overall development, if we can kind of, you know, turn him into a legitimate, you know, because, you know, the NBA is built on having guys 1 through 4 being able to bring up the ball and initiate offense. And for us, his overall, his next step of development is becoming more consistent in that regard. And I think he's doing a good job of that. You know, and once he starts to shoot the ball better, I think it's a no-brainer that he gets called up. So it's just a matter of time. And that's what's so crazy about the G League, right? It's like, you know, I think right now our roster's strong. I think we got some things, some pieces that we can add, especially as, you know, guys come back from overseas and start, you know, coming back to the G League. But right now our roster is great, but in 10 to 15 games or 20 games, it could be completely different.
Yeah, how do you deal with that? I mean, I know, like, I think it goes back to the initial question. You probably just have to, like, ride with the guys on your roster. But in terms of consistency, things could change in the G League like that. And I'm guessing with travel, it's not, like, the easiest thing in the world. Just, I guess I'm more curious about just life as a G League coach. This is like you really have to have a ball is life mentality. I'm assuming your travel accommodations are not the best to, like, I guess tell us, talk to the people about, like, what's it like, right? Like, grinding on the road like that. I completely asked you just like 17 different questions there. First.
yeah. No, hey, no, I get the gist of it. But, you know, when I was in Northern Arizona last year, this was really our travel schedule. If we had a game in Reno, Nevada, you know, we were leaving Prescott Valley, Arizona at 3:30 in the morning to make a 7 a.m. flight because we're 2 hours away from the airport. So it's like, you know, your travel accommodations are pretty crazy. And, you know, you fly everywhere commercially, which is not the worst thing in the world. But, you know, when you have connecting flights to almost everywhere you go and, you know, it's a little bit difficult. You feel as if you're kind of getting sick at all times. And
that sounds healthy and fun.
Yeah, exactly. It's healthy and fun. But it really makes you appreciate, you know, how hard this grind truly is. And, you know, I think for the guys that have been able to, you know, come through the G League and become back of the bench assistants, such as, like, you know, Scott Morrison, like, it just makes you cherish how much, you know, cherish just being in the NBA. And for me and my steps, like, I don't want to skip any. And I think being in the G League is just great for building character and building grit, you know.
I mean, it sounds like it could be pretty shitty at times, but I feel like that's also, like, a great way to, like, build some camaraderie with both other people on your coaching staff and the guys you're playing with, because you guys are all kind of going through this together. So do you have, like, I know you're pretty good friends with your former coaches in RGV and with the NA Suns. Like, can you just talk about, like, the camaraderie that is built through that?
You literally can write a novel on the stories that you experience while you're in the G League. And it's, you know, you go through this.
It wouldn't, like, be a novel then. It'd be a memoir, bro.
A memoir, right? A memoir?
Yes, so a memoir.
I'm getting my, I guess I'm getting my literature messed up. You know, you go through the ringer with these dudes and, you know, it's like the mood, you know, you got guys that go through mood swings and, you know, you obviously, your players get temperamental. The conditions are something that a lot of them have never been accustomed to, coming from high major Division I programs and, you know, charter flights, and things are just different and rough. And, you know, it's like, you really, you know, staff camaraderie and chemistry is everything. You know, if you don't have a united front in the G League, it becomes very difficult to coach. And players can sniff that out, you know, and the quicker that your staff can bond and really create a united front, the more success you're going to have. You know, working with guys like Joseph Blair, who's currently the head coach of the RGV Vipers, and Cody Topford, who's now behind the bench with Phoenix.
Yo, Nick, are you, like, messing with your microphone or something?
No, can you hear me?
You're just, like, coming in and out.
I think my mouth is a little bit away from the phone.
It's happening. Classic case of phone moving.
Yeah, I just stuttered like 4 times there. Sorry, I'm nervous.
It's no big deal. No big deal. keep going if you have more.
No, I mean, I'm just trying to think of actual stuff. I don't know if I should get into stories or not.
Can we tell the mad cow story?
No, I don't think we can tell that one.
Well, let me ask you a question about like the current Celtics. There's a talking about their struggles on offense, and in the recent games, they've been making shooting and making a lot of threes. They're getting a lot of open looks, but Brad Stevens mentioned today that they're really struggling to get to the rim. And so you mentioned that, like, with the Red Claws, you guys teach a similar schemes with a lot of five-out action. What do you do to kind of adjust the schemes to try and get more, I guess, play going towards the rim and try to draw more free throws or get more layups? Because right now they got the threes part down, but the layups part has been difficult.
You know, I think it all starts with what we call a 0.5 mentality, you know, and we define that as shoot it, rip it, swing it. And that's a big thing.
Woo, shoot it, rip it, swing it. I like that. Explain that more.
Shoot it, rip it, swing it. So when you touch the ball, right, I'm either shooting it, I'm either passing it to somebody, or either I'm ripping it and trying to make a play and driving to the rim. It's all about efficiency with the bounce, because at the next level, like, if you don't play with quick decisions, advantages go away in the snap of a finger. And, you know, for our guys here in the G League, if you shot fake and foot fake unnecessarily and take negative steps and play with the ball, space gets eaten up and you end up either turning it over or clogging a possession. So for us, like here in Maine, that's really been a huge point of emphasis. And our goal is 40 rim attempts a game. We want to get to the rim 40 or more times. You know, obviously a lot of people talk about like the percentage of your shots at the rim. We really just gauge attempts and go from there. But I think,
Do you have a certain number for threes as well? Like, do you have a ratio you want to hit?
No, I mean, we don't have a goal for threes taken. I mean, I think when you get in the 40 range, especially in the G League, I think you're compromising, your mentality at the rim. And I think for us, specifically, like, the more we get fouled, the more we attack the rim, the more we get fouled. And I think that plays into our overall mindset. So I think, like, it really just starts with a rim mentality and going from there. And without a 0.5 mentality, it's a lot harder to get to the rim. You know, so
what's a 0.5 mentality? Is that the same thing as swing it, rip it, grip it, bop it?
That's what I said, brother.
But how does 0.5 connect to swing it, grip it, bop it, twist
it? That's 0.5 mentality. Shoot it, rip it, swing it.
Okay, well, where's 0.5 come into play?
So 0.5 seconds.
Oh, okay, now I get it.
Make a decision, yeah.
Okay, now I get it. Yeah. That was another thing I wanted to ask about. Every time I've hung out with you recently, you're constantly watching film. How much does that – it feels like with your role in the G League, you every single time you're breaking down game film and tracking different plays – see how often they work, points per possession. How much of – I know you've been a basketball-obsessed person your entire life, but when did, I guess, film study kind of come into play, and how important is film study to you as a coach?
It's everything. You know, I think it's really like our ability to, you know, validate what we're seeing in-game and validate what we're not seeing, right? For us, it's a vital tool. For me personally, I really didn't get too vested in it until I was a graduate assistant at University of Miami, and just fell in love with it. And I think, like, it's your lifeline as a coach, right? Like, because a lot of times, you know, when you're playing, you don't know what the hell is going on, really, for the most part. Like, you can't reflect. I mean, it's tough to just in real time just evaluate every single decision you're making. And I think the more that we can correct and teach out of it, I think, you know, obviously you have to find that line of drowning guys and just introducing just enough, right? Like, I think one thing that I learned as being a coach in the G League is, like, when I first started being an assistant, my edits, you know, in terms of offensive improvement were anywhere between 10 to 15 minutes of film. And that drags out to being, you know, a 25 to 30 minute film session on just one end of the ball.
Well, can we talk about this? Cause this is the first I've like hearing about your edits. So when you're talking about your edits before a game, are you showing the entire team a package of plays? Or are you showing specific players your edits? Like, can you just talk about your game prep process in terms of film?
So I think it may be more interesting to talk about like post-game process of film.
Let's take it, like, however you want to take it, baby.
Yeah, so, like, you know, we played Delaware yesterday. So, after the game, you know, I'll get a copy of it. I'll watch all of our offense, and I'll essentially, like, tag clips that I like. And, you know, I base it on certain areas, right? So, you know, we have our four series, our five series, our double series. You break all that down. You see what we're doing right. You see what we're doing wrong. I tag it as improvements or strength. I put that together in what we call a sorter just to organize my clips. And then while I'm going through all my clips, I'll find what we call our vitamins. So I'm responsible for the development of our wings, Jeff Roberson, Nick King, and Justin Bibbs. So as I'm watching the game, if I find as if there are clips that relate more to them as individuals and I want to withhold them from showing them to the team and want to show them to those guys on an individual basis, I'll tag those clips as well. So I'll put all those things together in edits, one, a full team offensive improvement edit, and then all these what we call vitamins that will kind of bring guys to the side and show them, you know, areas of improvement, things that we like, that we think as if they're doing well and build on. You know, and that's a lot of the post game process. And then, you know, I'll hit those guys beforehand on that stuff. And then we'll come together as a team, and show the full team offensive edit.
How long is that normal? Like
usually normal? I, you know, and I try to keep things between 5 to 7 minutes at max in terms of how long the edit is, which, you know, will translate into about 8 to 10 minutes of actual film, like film review with the team, with me speaking. You know, I think it's what's really hard as a coach is like you want to touch on everything, right? Like I think as you feel as if you can improve everything, you feel as if you want to highlight every little bit of good. But it's really trying to condense things to, I would say, three to five major areas of improvement and 3 to 5 major areas of strengths, and usually kind of leaning towards just three, you know, because not everything is going to be retained, not everything is going to be picked up. And as long as we can just get the most vital points of emphasis across, the more effective we're going to be. And I think that's just the nature of the G League, right? You know, you hold guys to a, you know, a high levels of standard, but you know, at the end of the day, you have to know your audience. You have to know that this is not going to be the most perfect game. And you want to just, you know, make sure that you have that next play mentality and that you're not just getting hung up on every single little detail to the point where you drive yourself crazy.
Yeah, that's kind of the wild thing is that you also, you're part like kind of having to watch all this film and do a basketball guru, but you're also kind of a teacher psychologist and you have to read. Maybe you like press a little harder into some guys for them to get the message. Maybe you back off. Maybe some guys are better at film. Some guys are better at like on-court instruction. Right. So has it been difficult to like kind of like, because each year you're learning like 12 to 20 new personalities. Has that been a difficult part of coaching? Do you try to treat everyone in a similar manner or do you have to like adjust for kind of different personalities?
You know, it's very interesting. And I think it's, you know, it's the same message in the NBA, but I think before anything can be taught, and anybody can be reached, you have to establish amongst your players that you genuinely care about them. You know, and look, like X, you know, X's and O's and wins and losses are, you know, they're the end all and the be all in a way to coaching. But if you don't establish a sense of genuine care amongst your guys, it's that much more difficult to coach. And I think, you know, for anybody who coaches in the G League, If you don't establish that, it's really difficult to truly get through to some of these guys. You know, there's been trust issues with a lot of dudes, and guys come from backgrounds where, you know, trust is a vital thing. And I think if you can establish that genuine sense of love and care for who you're working with, I think your job becomes a lot more manageable. So.
That definitely makes sense. I wanted to just like, while I still have you here. So after you show these guys film, I think, in watching you do, coach, the one of the things I've liked the most is, watching your drills and how active they are. So you say you take the, so after, have you practiced since the Blue Coats game?
No, we had an off day today, so guys got some rest. Well, we will rest, but we will practice tomorrow.
So what is like? What are the drills that you're looking, based on what you saw in the past game, what are you looking to improve moving forward? And what drills are like, what are you doing when the guys are actually on the court to try to like help them improve?
Well, I think the new trend in player development is live conceptual action, right? So, you know, a big point of emphasis for us here in Boston is just everything we try to do is read and react to a degree. That doesn't mean that everything is guarded at full speed, but we try to simulate as much live action as we possibly can. You know, that's why we do have a large staff here in the G League, and we want to have guys, you know, have experience physicality and make real-time decisions. So a lot of things we do are decision-based. You know, for instance, I may, like, if I'll have one coach guard a player, and I'll try to do my best explaining this via phone, but I'll have one coach guard a player, I'll be the screener, and say, for instance, the player is coming off of a DHO, I'm dribbling at that player. He has to read whether or not that coach is going to trail on that DHO or he's going to go under and meet him on the other side, and then I will rescreen as a result. So if the coach trails, then he'll come off, throw a pocket pass to me as I roll, and then we'll develop the sequence from there. If the coach goes under that DHO, he'll use the rescreen, throw the pocket pass going back to the same hand to which he was coming from, and go from there. And I think, like, if, you know, obviously I hope that explanation helps, but more so it's just like that decision-making element of things not being predictable, right? Like, I think a lot of times in player development, the movements that we introduce, like, you know, there's a progression, right? You have to learn a movement to really be good at it. But we want to train instinct as much as we can. And I think by introducing that decision-making element, you allow guys to become more fluid. And that's really our goal here. I think a lot of times people don't realize that fluidity is really a separating factor between being an NBA player and not being an NBA player.
Can you just explain more what you mean by fluidity? Because I'm understanding it's just like ability to kind of make any read and make any decision without it being like too difficult and do like making that like decision quickly.
Yeah. And I think like a lot of times really what you see in the G League is that guys have a really difficult time just playing in space without having to think, right? Like sometimes like, okay, well, if teams are changing their coverages, guys will freeze, right? And what we're trying to introduce as developers is to help guys play with less thought. And if your development is based off of just everything being predictable, one move here, one move there, then I think guys don't really have the experience of learning how to truly play read and react basketball, right? You know,
so who's like one of the more fluid members of the current Celtics?
I think, Kyrie is the definition of fluidity. I think Terry is extremely fluid. I think those two guys I would really consider as being two of your most fluid ball players. I think Al Horford has, you know, obviously his IQ helps him in that regard. But in terms of just overall, like, fluidity with the ball in their hands, I think Terry and Kyrie are at the upper echelon. But I think it's just like knowing how to play ball, right? Like you gotta, in order to develop, you have to learn how to play the game. And like I said, I think a lot of times we get too predictable in the way that we develop guys. And as a result, they just, it translates into being stiff on the floor. So that's really like our mindset as developers here with the Red Claws, is just helping guys learn how to just hoop, if that makes sense.
Makes enough sense to me, but that I am not very good at hooping. Full disclosure, I've known Nick Friedman. I call him Rick Friedman since we were 5 years old. We're going to wrap up the podcast, which we hope to do again as we more check-ins with the G League moving forward. But I need you to tell the listeners about the greatest moment you've shared the basketball court with me, Jam Packard. What is my greatest moment? What's the greatest thing you've ever seen me do on a basketball court?
So we were at Danny Heat Park, which is formerly known as St. Peter's. It was me, you, my little brother Maddie, Clay Marsh, and I think one other jabroni, challenging a couple dudes to play 5-on-5. First possession of the game, I get a defensive rebound. I outlet it the full length of the court, and he's got like one defense. Sam's got one defender to beat, and just performs this magical finger roll that just you know. And we're talking outdoor hoops, right? So like,
you also have to describe what I like looked at the time. How like I was like what 5 foot
I
eight?
I don't know.
Like,
I don't know if you had a mullet at the time. Either.
I think I probably sure. did. I think I definitely had a mullet at the time.
I think Sam had a. I think you did have a mullet.
To be fair, it was a joke mullet that turned into a real mullet because I was lazy.
Yes, this is true. But it was glorious and it was smooth. If you put your hands through it, it was just like velvet.
Oh, yeah. Well, my hair has always been soft because I shampooed and conditioned, rinse and repeat. But, yeah, so we were playing some pickup hoops, and I think that it still is my greatest basketball
memory. You didn't let me finish
what actually happened.
So I throw this ball. It's what we call a pitch ahead, and it's a perfectly executed transition possession. Throw it ahead. You got one guy to beat. He's on your hip. You're going to your right hand, and you finger roll this thing literally off the top of the square, and it hits nothing but net on a double rim. We just were like rolling from there. I don't think you scored 1 point after that, but I think I helped Clay Marsh, and I helped.
I think we won the game. I think I set the tone for the seriousness of the basketball that was going to be played.
You did. You did. You just made sure that you were fulfilling your role as a sacrificial role player, right?
That's all I am. That's what I say. I strive to be. On a basketball court now, I can't shoot, but I will set you a goddamn screen that will.
You will set a goddamn screen, and
I will foul every time you drive on me, Paul. I play defense.
This is true. It's true.
I was playing pickup the other day, and some guy did the same thing to me. Like, just like literally put my hand, like his hands in my chest, and I was just like, "Oh, that's not cool." And then I realized, "Oh, that's probably how I play defense on every possession." And then I had some perspective. So there you go.
Right. Right.
All right, Nick Friedman coming live from Portland, Maine. He is the lead assistant coach of the Maine Red Claws, and he's checking in. Hopefully, every couple of weeks to give us that that G League update. Appreciate you taking the time, Nick.
No problem, man. And hey, Millie's, hey, if you're out there listening, can you please deliver over some strawberry Goya?
That's Millie's, if you're listening, strawberry Goya soda to Nick Friedman in Maine.
I need it. It's fire.
Great stuff there. Thanks, Nick Friedman, lead assistant for the Maine Red Claws. Maine Red Claws will be the home for Robert Williams for much of the season once Daniel Tice is healthy. So go check out the Maine Red Claws. If you can't check them out in person, the games are streamed live on Facebook. So check them out. It'll be fun to watch them as they continue to grow and as our young players continue to grow. Thank you for listening to this podcast. If you're a new subscriber, please give us that 5-star rating. Write us that good review. It helps us out. It helps us grow in the rankings. It really, really helps us as we continue to strive to give you great content and to get the money from the advertisers to help pay us as we continue to do that. So it's a really big help. Podcast is free, but the ratings and the reviews really help us. It's kind of like your way of paying. And if you have done all that, the next step is very simple. Share the podcast. Tell everybody to listen to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network.